Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the PODcast, your favorite podcast about nu metal. This is episode number 55. This month, we are covering Soulfly's self-titled album, Soulfly. I'm John, and with me is a man who, when it comes to vengeance, he's taking an eye for an eye. It's Brian Quinby.
Eye for an eye for an eye. It's so funny, the four and part. Is just a guy talking, it feels like, and then he screams. Yeah, we're doing Soulfly, so very exciting for me. A band
finally won a poll. I mean, you just put your foot down. I think you put this in the last four consecutive polls or three consecutive polls.
Can I say I'm going when we pick our songs or pick our albums at the end of the show? I said you guys gave me what I wanted. So I will punish myself. And I put two albums in there that are going to be very punishing to listen to. So,
oh, okay. Because I will also say that my theme for this month was two bad albums as well.
So, oh, yeah. That's going to be great. Then you might have two of the same albums.
Well, we'll see. Chris.
I think one of them is such a possible album that we would both. I'm gonna be so mad if you have one of my that, because I know I feel like, well, you could also, because there were two ways that I thought about it. I was like, I could do second or third albums, you know what I mean, where it's like that's a real good way to find a bad nu metal album.
Yes,
is to just check the third album, the one that had to come out in like 2005.
Yeah, there weren't too many bands whose third album was really good. Korn, you got Follow the Leader. Deftones, you got White Pony. Limp Bizkit, you got Chocolate Starfish. But then after that, it gets very dire.
You're talking about the top of the top bands, yes, though. Like Cold Chamber's second album is so bad.
Yes.
It's so incredibly bad. And remember how much we liked the first one?
The first one was very fun. I liked the first one a lot.
I think maybe the set... I bought the second one and had it in my car and just never put it in a CD player because I was so excited. This album has a lot of this too. I was so excited before it came out because of the massive amount of guests on the album, which is like more of a rap thing.
Yeah.
Than it is a metal thing, but like it's so fucking exciting that they had a cover of Shock the Monkey with Ozzy Osbourne in it. But then when I listened to it, I was like, this is one of the worst songs I've ever heard in my life. This is so bad.
It's also, it you're right. Like, nu metal obviously took a lot from rap. And it does seem like every nu metal band had their like guest era. You know, like obviously Follow the Leader has a ton of guests on it for Korn. Limp Bizkit never really went down the guest. Oh, no, I guess they did.
Oh, God.
What am I talking about? Yeah, Chocolate Starfish has they have the Roland Urban Assault vehicle with like 40 rappers on it. And Exhibit was on a track. And then Method Man, obviously, and In Together Now. And that's then even Deftones, like Deftones had Maynard on Passenger on White Pony.
Well, the Limp Bizkit had like my favorite one, which is Scott Weiland and I think Jonathan Davis. That song.
Yeah, Nobody Like You.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of my favorite nu metal songs, period. I just
go.
Everybody on that. On Significant Other, everybody that did it, they were like, well, we got the best. They like it seemed like people were trying, which is really weird because like, why would you try for an album? I guess because by the time they're recording this album, Faith has hit.
And oh, yeah.
People are going to buy the fuck out of this album. Because you can look, like, there are albums that we've listened to where they have guests where you can tell the guest is like, I don't need
this. Not interested. Yeah. Well, it is kind of like the rapping guests on the Limp Bizkit albums, I feel like, are kind of always like that because they just know that it's so easy to out-rap Fred Durst. So they're like, well, you know, I just go 50% and I'm going to be better than this guy. So,
but I think I honestly think a lot of rappers liked Limp Bizkit.
I think so too. It feels like everybody likes Fred in general. It just seems like people like Fred.
Well, even now, like, you know, you could ask that and like a lot of rappers would probably be like, yeah, I like Limp Bizkit. I mean, I've always found Limp Bizkit to be almost the perfect combination of the two things, rap and metal. I did go see a cover band this weekend.
You did? That's not surprising because you do love covers.
But I hate going places.
So your love for covers outweighed outweighed your hate for going places.
I actually really like Katie. My wife's brother is in a cover band.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, how did you possibly end up seeing a cover band? That makes sense.
And they play almost every weekend and they're great. They're fucking really good. Like unbelievably good. And like where it's like, you know, sometimes, I mean, with music, it happens so much more with music. You go see your friend's music and you're like, ugh,
oh, God, totally
sucks. I got to get out of here. You know what I mean? No, like you're trying to figure out how to leave before they're off stage, but you're like, well, I have to talk to them after they get off stage. But he's in this cover band where they play like 90s covers.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh my God, John, they fucking ripped it. It's like I downloaded what I want to hear in this guy's brain. They played Stay by Lisa Loeb.
Great song.
They followed it with Torn by Natalie Imbruglia.
Great song. And
then they're like, hey, how would you like to hear a little bit of Possum Kingdom by the Toadies?
Wow.
And
then,
so they're playing Possum Kingdom, right? And my wife is like, oh, I didn't know this came out in 1994. I was like, the reason is, because this is the best song ever made. It really, I've never met somebody who's like, I don't like Possum Kingdom.
It's a great song.
And it just is, it's been on the radio since that day, since 1994. So I think a lot of people think it came out in their time. Cause it's so weird. That is such a fucking metal band cover, like layup. You know what I mean? Possum Kingdom is such a layup for a heavy metal band to cover that it's pretty surprising that you haven't heard. Because, fuck, you know, they also played Zombie.
Oh, great song. And, tough to sing, though. How'd the singer handle that?
So it was my brother-in-law's girlfriend, and she's fucking great.
Nice.
She did Zombie. She did What's Up by Four Non
Blondes. Oh, yeah. That's
and not easy both either. Of them sounded exactly like, it was insane. They were so good. But
so you had a good time.
And then what happened?
Were you dancing? Or were you and Kate dancing? Or?
Like when we were leaving, Kate's like, I'm glad you came with me because she's always wanting to go. And I'm always like, I'd rather not go anywhere, period.
Yeah.
But she always goes to movies for me and stuff. So I just was like, I'll go. Let's go. But I was like, I was thinking in my mind, like, I'm in a good mood and I'm having like a really good time, but I'm not going to dance. So it looks like I'm in a fucking bad mood and I'm just kind of standing there, but I'm like kind of mouthing the lyrics or whatever. That was how I was trying to show I was having fun because I assume.
right. You don't want people judging you like, oh, geez, this band's playing a hit after hit and this guy hates it.
There was a couple that were fucking just going at it to Black Hole Sun.
Like, I think I saw your tweet about that. They were getting
like really grinding on each other. Like that this guy, man, I don't know. He gets horny to some different music than most people.
Black Hole Sun, I can't say is really one that where I'm like, ooh, baby, light my fire. Let's go.
Play Dishwalla so I can fucking get hurt.
Dishwalla, great song. Counting Blue Cars.
Yeah. Mm. I don't mind that one.
That's a good song. Yeah.
I think it's funny because like, cause I was into new metal from, I guess it would be 94. I think I got into Pantera, which isn't new metal, but it is very
heavy. And that ended your relationship with like 90s radio.
With alt radio. Yeah. And also working at, I was working at Chuck E. Cheese at the time, and all the guys in the kitchen loved all that stuff. You know what I mean? Right. Like they love.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
The radio is playing Bush, Possum. Well, Possum. They were playing like Bush and Dishwalla and Everclear and Third Eye. And
this Tonic. Was, we get some Tonic in
Tonic,
there.
Tonic, yeah. And these are these guys, like they love it. Yeah. And I hated it. And I don't even know if like I really hated it. I think I just wanted to be different from the adults that were working at Chuck E. Cheese.
Did you now here's the real question. They're a 90s alternative cover band. Which Gin Blossom song did they play?
I don't remember. Hey Jealousy. Okay, that's Gin Blossom. Yeah, they played Hey Jealousy. Okay. I mean,
that's not my favorite Gin Blossom song. I feel like I would rather hear Follow You Down or oh my God, what's the love song? It's like something about you or I don't know.
Most
until I hear it from you, till I hear it from you.
The most impressive.
I love Gin Blossoms.
Really?
Oh yeah, fucking great! Gin Blossoms are a great band. That Allison Road album. I think that's the name of it. Allison Road.
Is
it's that so it? Good. That whole album is phenomenal.
I got to tell you, they did play Iris by the Goo Goo Dolls, but the song that I think impressed me the most, besides
Iris, is a great song. Also,
besides the songs that. You know, Rory's girlfriend sang, which were great, is that they did Black by Pearl Jam, which feels like a very hard song to do.
Yeah.
And I think I always had in my mind that they did that. For some reason, in my mind, I was like, they do this with like an orchestra, right? Like they have a string section for this song. No, they don't. I'm watching them play it. And I'm like, that's all fucking guitars. And then it's just the guitar player going, that's not like a choir, which I thought, I always found that song to sound so huge, but it's one of my favorites, Black by Pearl Jam. I'm a big, huge
good song. Fan of it. Sorry, yeah. Allison Road, I think, is their greatest hits album, maybe. But yeah, it's crazy. The first Gin Blossoms record came out in 89. I didn't even know that. I thought they were like strictly a 90s band.
I think
Dusted was the first album, and that has Hey Jealousy and Found Out About You on it. And Found Out About You is also an awesome song.
I just think some of those 90s songs were so good that they just kept playing them on the radio through that whole.
Yeah, totally.
That whole era was, I mean, there's stuff I hate. Like they played Lit, and I'm like, you don't have to play Lit. Just
that's a great song, though.
The My Own Worst Enemy. Yeah,
great song.
I don't know. I'm doing You Make Me Completely Miserable, maybe. I don't like those guys, the Lit guys. And it's because, like, I sometimes do a series with Alexander Edward from Minion Death Cult called Butt Fest, where we talk about butt rock. And, like, the stuff I learned, like, those guys, do you know those guys that own a restaurant?
Lit?
Yeah, I believe it.
When I'm in California. You should go there. Oh, Lit does seem like the type of band that would own a restaurant.
The Brothers Popov. Own a restaurant.
Oh, is that their name? The Popov Brothers? I don't know anything about Lit other than My Own Worst Enemy is a sick song. That's all I have.
Oh man. Restaurant. All right. The Popov Brothers restaurant. Oh, they're giving me fucking other thing. Let me see here. California. All right, here we go.
Is it a Mexican restaurant? I feel like I'm going to bet that it's like a.
Oh, it is. Okay. Debut new country. Oh, no. They're a country band now, too. That's the other thing.
Lit?
Yes.
Oh, fuck off.
Yeah. They've gone straight up to country.
They've gone woke.
But they're not woke.
Country, the famous woke music.
it is the last refuge of guys who just want to. And listen. I want to make money doing what I do. And if it came down to having to do a podcast about country music instead of new metal, I would do it.
You would.
Oh, here it is. Okay. Lit singer AJ Popov opens Fullerton Salon, New Food in Little Saigon. It's called KKBB.
So it's like what? Asian fusion?
Oh, probably. And then, of course, there's an ad that
I knew it would be some kind of like. Mexican or yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's just very funny.
Called KKBB.
I think that's what it is called. Yeah. There's so many articles about them
Kiss, kiss, bang, bang. Is that the
AKBV? Is that what you said?
Kiss, kiss, bang, bang lounge bar.
That sounds like a pop-off gimmick. I also don't like.
I mean, it looks kind of nice, actually.
Oh, yeah. I was talking about.
It's like a lounge in Koreatown.
Yeah.
It's like they have live music.
Well, yeah, of course.
Of course.
Lit.
This is owned by the Lit guy.
Me and Chris just did Seth MacFarlane, guys. And I was talking about how, like, the worst thing in the world to me is that crooner shit. The Rat Pack stuff.
Sure. Okay.
Like, that's the vibe I would think they would have at their restaurant, because they just seem like the kind of, because they did that in My Own Worst Enemies, are like at the bowling alley and all that fucking tiki stuff. And you know, they're like Frank Sinatra, he's a great singer, he was such a great man, and stuff like that. Or Dean Martin, like that stuff I hate. I once got yelled at a comedy show for saying that in Las Vegas, that somebody said something and I was just like, oh, fuck the Rat Pack. And the guy was like, get out of Vegas then. Like, from the
you can't be here. You can't be in this city.
I mean, how could you look at me and think, oh, well, I guess I just look like a guy that would be into the Rat Pack in some way. Even
do
though,
you? I don't think you do at all.
Thank you, John, because I hate those guys. I hate that shit. Dan's like either mad at me or he's agreeing with me.
I'm pissed off, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
I feel like you're attacking my heritage when you say you don't like the Rat Pack. So.
Well, I do. I am attacking Italians.
All right, that's fine.
Oh, this isn't a restaurant that the Lit guy owns. He owns a fucking hair salon.
That's even fucking weirder, though.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, totally different thing. Lit singer AJ Popoff opens Fullerton Salon, and then it's in the same article they're talking about a new food place in Little Saigon. It says AJ Popoff and Sublime manager Mike Cheese Brown recently opened the salon at 229 West Commonwealth Avenue. Popoff, known back in the day for a rockabilly quaff, is getting behind the barber chair after years of doing bandmates hair for fun. He recently attended barber college in Los Angeles. I was always obsessed with changing my hair, he said, dyeing his hair to black, a la Elvis Presley. I was always cutting other guys in my band's hair. I always had fun doing it. About 2 years ago, Popoff met with Brown to talk music, but ended up talking about Brown's successful hair salons in Indiana, also called Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. His girlfriend is a stylist who got him interested in it. When he's not touring or working, Popoff plans to do it all when it comes to hair salon services. I think it would be cool to get a haircut and shave from the dude from Lit, Brown said with a laugh. And so, yeah, I think he had to call it KKBB because there is already the Kiss Kiss Bang Bang in LA, the restaurant / club.
It is very, very funny to me that the guy that had maybe the worst hair thing I've ever seen in my life, that long, he's long beard, right? Long braided beard.
Who, Popoff?
Yeah,
I don't think he had a long.
Wait, I mean, My Own Worst Enemy.
Did he? I feel like no.
He had an annoying hairdo.
Yeah, he had the Elvis like pomp. He had like the pompadour, but no, he never had like a long braided beard. Soul patch in the My Own Worst Enemy video. He's got a soul patch and he's got like Elvis sideburns and like a big hair.
Guitar player had an annoying beard.
Oh, okay.
And like, I can't share my screen over here.
Oh, I'm seeing the annoying beard on the guitar player. That's gross.
Well, at least it's not him running.
Oh, that is nasty, especially combined with that hair. Oof. Yeah. It's got like bleach blonde kind of mullet like hair and then like a braided beard. Oof.
I don't want to get my hair cut by like.
I will say, Bri, I'm going to send you a link right now. This is an incredibly funny soul patch that you could have. Let me see here. Well, just like that, like a person could have. Let me see.
Open. I'll get one if you think that's important for me.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to open the image. There we go. Check this out. This is a really good. It's just like it's the smallest soul patch you've ever seen. And it's like off kilter. It's like not straight down. It's just like a tiny little I just dropped it in the chat here in the
ugh.
Just like it's not even lined up. It's like crooked off to the side.
I guess like guys like that do like, cause I went and got my haircut at like you go and they all have the like great haircuts, you know, but you want it to be like, I think when you're getting your haircut, you want the person to have like normal guy hair so that you know that they can actually cut hair like a right. normal guy would want.
It does feel I feel like when you go, because I got my hair cut in a salon for a long time, and it feels like it's different. Like for a stylist of women's hair, usually it's like you want them to have like some crazy fucked up hairdo. It's like they have some weird cut or they've got like a rainbow dye job or whatever, and they're just like, see, this is how good I am at cutting hair. And I feel like when you go into a barber shop, you just want them all to have like tight haircuts. You're like, good. Yeah. Just the regular thing, please.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, and you know, maybe I could make a friend again. The rockabilly hairdo. Yeah. I'm like, okay. The rockabilly hairdo makes me think like, okay, I can.
What do you mean? Maybe you could make a friend again.
Remember that guy hates me because he's not listening to anything like that I do. He hates my guts because I made fun of rockabilly.
Oh yeah, true, true.
The most mad anybody's ever got at me. But the rockabilly hairdo seems like it takes some work.
Oh, it definitely, yeah, it takes some work for sure. Oh, dude, I mean, my hair's getting a little long, so if I just kind of like spike it up like that, like it's not full rockabilly, but I've got a little bit of the like.
When I was when I was reviewing it, they were fucking talking about the process, and
I know, but like I'm just saying, imagine I just went like kind of a little straight back and then over. Like this is kind of.
I used to always want to brush my hair when I was a kid.
I'm getting close.
And I had hair, I would brush it straight back and like wet it and hairspray it, and then every time I'd walk down the basement, my dad be like, or walk out to go to school, my dad's like, "Nice hair, slick." And then I would go change it because he called me slick.
I remember I dyed my hair blonde when I was like 13, because that the style at the time in Ontario was to get a mushroom cut and you dyed the top blonde and the underneath like you left it brown. So I had that, and I remember I saw my grandpa for the first time and he said, "How's it going, Betty?"
Yeah, yeah. A guy
it's because I dyed my hair blonde that made me a woman, I guess.
I had purple hair and painted my nails like, I wouldn't paint my nails like my wife would, Katie would paint my nails, but I'd be like, you gotta do it like gunmetal gray. Like the name had to sound like something right, a man would be into. So it was always gunmetal, and she'd paint my nails. I go work.
I need fucking pussy purple.
Yeah. Well, no, that would not be one I would get, but throbbing hard penis purple might work.
I need hard cock beige.
Yeah. I would go to work and there was these fucking guys, because it was not a, it wasn't a country club, but it wasn't a public golf course, right? It was called a golf club.
Okay.
And I worked there as a dishwasher, which mainly entailed like washing dishes every hour or so, and then drawing Hitler mustaches on everybody in the newspaper. Most of the other time, and
hell smoking yeah,
cigarettes in the back. So anyway, like, this guy called me princess all the fucking time. And I'm like, I mean, I always was like, this sucks, man, because I could whip this guy's ass if I want. He's like 60. You know what I mean? And yeah. I have to just put up with this shit. This 60-year-old man. I got fucking.
We should go whip his ass now. We should go find him and whip his ass now. He's probably like 85 dude, now. We can easily kick his ass. Just you and me just roll up on him POD cast style. Just can whip this old guy's ass.
Can you imagine a guy hating your guts? Like the guy just like remembered me all the time. Like I go to the same restaurants all the time, and I don't know anybody at any of the restaurants, you know, and that's maybe mean or whatever, but I tip well, and you know, I do what I can, but I'm just not paying attention. you know? So this guy like remembered me every day and was like, hey, princess, how's it going? It's like, fuck you, man. What, you do work at a computer all day?
Fuck you, bitch.
Yeah, bitch, I'll fuck you up. Let's fucking do this.
All right. This month,
you motherfucker.
It finally won a poll. The album that has been in the poll more than any other album before we did it on the podcast, it is Soulfly's self-titled debut, Soulfly. It came out on April 21st, 1998. It was recorded at Indigo Ranch Studios in Malibu, California. Of course, the famous home of producer Ross Robinson. This album came out on Roadrunner after Max Cavalera's departure from Sepultura. Max says about that, it was so hard to start over having been in Sepultura for so long. In fact, it was harder getting Soulfly going than it was getting Sepultura started. Coming into a whole new situation underneath the shadow of Roots was a huge challenge for me, and most people thought I was nuts. Plus, we made a conscious effort not to sound like Sepultura, which we'll get to that. Okay. My choice of musicians took me away from straight metal and into a vibe that embraced a lot more while still being heavy. Part of the magic was working with some of my all-time favorite Brazilian musicians, and that really pushed me to write some great and some very different sounding music. Eye for an Eye is still my favorite, man, and I also like Tribe. That's like an anthem for all metalheads. So yeah, when he first left the band, he was working with, when he first left Sepultura, he was mainly working with Brazilian musicians. He had Roy Mayorga, pardon me, on drums and percussion, Chelo Diaz on bass, and Lucio Maia on lead guitar. And then this album also features a lot of guest spots, which we will get into as well, but it has Dino and Burton from Fear Factory, Fred Durst, DJ Lethal, Chino, Benji Webb from Skindred, Christian Olda Wolbers, who was in Fear Factory at the time. But yeah, anyway, we'll get to all of that. This album did pretty well for a sort of brand new band and a new metal band at the time. It's certified gold by the RIAA in the United States. It's also certified gold in Australia. Peaked at number 79 on the US Billboard 200 and also appeared on charts in Australia, Austria, Belgium, the Netherlands, Finland, France, Germany, New Zealand, Scotland, Sweden, and the UK. The album spawned four singles, Eye for an Eye, Umba Baruma, Bleed, and Tribe. Tribe was the best performing of those. It peaked at number two on the UK rock and metal charts. Most of the other songs, or all the other singles, did not appear on any charts other than Bleed, which was on the UK singles chart at 83. And it was also named the number 30 best new metal album of all time by Metal Hammer. The write up there is forged in the wake of turmoil. Max Cavalera had not only left Sepultura, but had also recently lost his son. The emotional charge of this album is huge and overpowering in places. The Brazilian world music experiments of Sepultura's Roots era are taken to their logical conclusion, and with the ubiquitous Ross Robinson producing, the speaker-trashing low-end rumble is so earth-shakingly heavy, it feels like you're listening to the metal equivalent of shifting plate tectonics. Okay, Brian, I know that this was a big record for you in 1998. Walk me through your history with the Soulfly record back in 1998.
Well, I just got into Sepultura like in 95, I would guess. I don't know. Whenever Roots came out, that I think I talked about it on the
episode. Yeah, I think Roots is 95. It's either 95 or 96. I'll look it up for you.
So the guy that at the record store was like, oh,
96, February 20th, 96.
Okay. So he's like, you'd probably like the Sepultura album. And I had never heard Chaos AD yet, which Chaos AD is a really good album too. But he was like, you should check this out. You know, it has Jonathan Davis from Korn. And so I got it. I had also read about that stuff in like metal magazines like Circus or some shit, you know, said that, hey, they're gonna have these guest spots. And so I got that album. I fucking loved it, and they broke up like immediately. It's like you get into a fucking band and then like it sucks to get into a band that has already broken up. It's actually better for me to get into a band that's already broken up.
Right. Because you know going in, like, this is probably it, but whatever, I still like it. Or yeah.
Yeah, like doing Typo Negative, being really into Typo Negative, but knowing that Peter Steele's dead is kind of like, okay, I can get used to that. That's something I just have to deal with. But I like Sepultura so much that I was just like waiting for the next album, and I thought it was great. But then they announced this album early, and like, it was very much, and I must have been on the internet reading stuff and also reading alternative press and stuff, but they started talking about the guests on this album and the fact that it's Max, which, you know, honestly, is the guy, Max and Igor are the two guys you would know from Sepultura. I guess Andreas is also like an original member or some or whatever.
Yeah, but they're brothers, right? Like, they've got that whole thing. Yeah.
Max is the lead singer too. I mean, honestly, like, everybody, I don't think anybody gets in a band that doesn't think that the lead singer is going to get most of the fucking attention. These guys apparently did, you know, but I don't think anybody thinks that, because they call it a front man. You know what I mean? And like, that you're the person that they associate with the album. But then he announces this album, and I think Sepultura announced one right around then too. So we got these albums coming out, but it feels to me like the community, like the nu metal sort of community, rallied around this Soulfly album, and like a bunch of them did guest spots. And like, I just remember being like, this album's going to come out. It's going to be so good. It's going to be like Sepultura, but with like Fred Durst and Chino. And, you know, they said somebody from Cypress Hill, Christian O'Wolbers from, like, they start naming all these people. And you're like, holy fuck, man. They seem to have really rallied around this album. And then I got it and I fucking loved it. You know, when it is very long. And it is definitely one of those albums where it's weird to review the whole album because it's a lot. There's a ton of songs. And admittedly, Max Cavalera admittedly said, I'd rather give you a long album that you can skip around and find the stuff you like than an album that's too short, which that's not how it works. I don't think that's how it worked at the time.
I disagree. I disagree with Max's thesis on that.
Right. I'm saying that's not, and it that had never worked. Nu metal had never been a thing that worked that way. Like, that first Korn album is a whole piece that you like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, these were the reason I love this stuff so much is because so much of when you're like, in sixth, seventh, eighth grade is singles. Like, you're just like, I only care about the song I hear 47 times a day on this album. But, you know, by this time in my life, I had gotten to, like, you know, the real thing that is like putting together a full album that I could, you know, put the CD in and not have to take it out. And, you know, I didn't have to do that with this, but there's definitely like, when I was listening to it for this podcast, I was like, oh, kind of forgot about this. I didn't even know this was here. Like, is this a song? Is this a special edition or something? And it wasn't. So like, yeah, it's a maybe a bit too long. I think that our complaint about it is that because we had to listen to the whole thing, it was more of a pain in the ass. But I do like the idea. I think if you're skipping around, I don't think you really have to skip around much on this album. I think you just have to end it. You like it. Everything's good to a point, and then it is just like, I don't need this anymore. You know, yeah. It's not like one of those things where like you skip number three, you skip number six. Like, it's not skipping around necessarily. It's just ending it early.
Yeah, you get enough. You get enough of it.
Yeah, at the normal time for an album too, like 45 minutes to 55 minutes in. But yeah, if you're reviewing this stuff, then it's torturous.
It's a bit long for sure. Yeah, so this Soulfly is an interesting one because, you know, I've talked about this before, But, you know, a lot of the way that I accessed nu metal was through Much Music, and Much Music was really only focused on the popular bands at the time. And so Soulfly just never really fit in that category, which is kind of strange because, you know, I think people do think of Sepultura as, you know, as sort of a seminal band, right, of that era, and kind of a band that was like proto nu metal, but then also nu metal at the same time. So
I think Chaos AD is what you would call like proto nu metal, but you would say that
Roots is nu metal,
and Sepultura is the first one of those bands that did a nu metal album. Like Slayer ended up doing one.
Yeah,
Metallica totally. Ended up
with Machine Head.
Sepultura was the first band to be the band that did it, and arguably the only successful one.
Yeah, it was fucking. I mean, Roots is really good for sure. And I remember like it was to the point where I used to pronounce it Sepultura because I just had no idea. Like we just had no information about them really. Like they just didn't get played in the same way that Korn and Limp Bizkit and even like Incubus and Linkin Park and, you know, bands like that got played at the time. And even Deftones, you know, I think I was more aware of a band like Deftones than I was of Sepultura or Soulfly. But I do remember, you know, there was a couple things with Soulfly that kind of twigged for me. The first one, and I've also talked about this compilation album on the show before, but I had this Canadian compilation album called Hard. And it was just like one of those like random, just like a record label decided to put a compilation together back in the 90s. That was just like a common thing that happened, and Bleed was on it. And I remember, you know, I was a huge Limp Bizkit fan, so I really liked Bleed, and I fully forgot that it was even on this record. Like I thought going in, cause I've never listened to this full record before. And I thought going into this, I was like, fuck, I don't think I'm going to know any of the songs on this considering Soulfly is such a big band. And then Bleed came on and I was like, oh, hell yeah. I love this song. This is awesome.
It's crazy. That song to me is like what like these guys trying as hard as they can to get this album over. Like that rap in that song when everything drops out and it's DJ Lethal and Fred Durst. It's just the I've never seen somebody perfectly use a guest like that. Yeah. It's the perfect, that's all you want from Fred Durst, you know what I mean? You want a little rap, maybe he'll scream with you a little bit, you know?
Yeah, like, yeah, for sure.
But that's like they said you guys do what you do, so all of the Soulfly stuff like kind of, but it still sounds like the same song, it still sounds like something from the Soulfly album. It just gets so fucking hard when Fred Durst is rapping at that point.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think, you know, it's funny to think too that it didn't really hit more of like nu metal consciousness because of all the guest spots, right? Like you've got Fred Durst, you've got Chino, you've got the Fear Factory guys, you've got DJ Lethal. Not Skindred wasn't a household name, but just, you know, as you said, it's a lot of guest spots. So I'm a little surprised it didn't hit me a little more. But obviously, so there was that song, and then of course Max is on Head Up. And at the time, Head Up was probably my least favorite song on Around the Fur, or it was like in the conversation, which is, I love it now, I was still getting adjusted to liking really heavy music, and Head Up just was so heavy. It's probably the heaviest song on Around the Fur.
The one I hate, I actually, the song on Around the Fur that I hate, that I think is the most heavy song is Ricketts.
Okay.
I absolutely hate that fucking song.
It really
to be the heaviest song on. Yeah, it's their worst song, I think.
I do find like Deftones leaning into heavy, like Elite is easily the worst song on White Pony. Like, yeah, whenever they tried to do that, that version of Deftones is not one I like. But yeah, so I think I just kind of, sorry.
I'm sorry. Head Up has Engine Number 9 vibes. I just love that song.
Oh, Head Up is a great song.
First time I heard. Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, at the time, it was just kind of like, oh, it's a little heavy. I don't think I really like this Max guy that's on here. So it was this kind of strange thing where I just never felt compelled to really, like, check out this album. But I don't think I ever had a negative, necessarily a really negative connotation of Soulfly. It just was one of those records where it just never entered my consciousness So coming into it after really liking Roots, I was kind of interested. And I'm curious, Brian, you know, I think we're going to get into the history of the band and stuff a little bit. Like, you know, you talk about the nu metal community itself sort of rallying around Max. As like a fan of that music at the time, do you remember what your sort of takeaway was from the Sepultura breakup and Soulfly kind of starting? Like, were you on Max's side as well? Yeah. Like, what do you remember?
I was on his side. I think it's more complex than that now, especially after reading all the articles we read. But yeah, I was kind of on his side because he's a lead singer. I don't give a crap about anybody else in the band. You know right. what I mean? And yeah. then this comes out. Once this album comes out, I'm like, I don't need Sepultura anymore. And I just never listened to them again. I think the album's called Awake, the one that came out the first
like right after Max.
And yeah. it has a guy from Cleveland as the lead singer. And I was just like, okay, I don't give a crap about this, you know? And I never listened to that album. I still have never listen to that.
It is called Against. is the first record. It's got Derek Green who took over, and it's weird because they kind of follow the Roots path, because it says like Roots that preceded it, the album has a variety of guest musicians and incorporates tribal influences. Japanese percussion elements are added with the assistance of Japanese taiko group Kodo. So it's kind of funny to see that, you know, they were like, oh, let's switch it up to the Japanese. Let's do some Japanese drumming on here.
If you can definitely tell that, like, the tribal stuff in Roots, which is some of the most interesting stuff in fucking Roots. But like, you can definitely tell that was Max that was doing a lot of that stuff, because again, I really don't believe that my group of people, nobody went back to Sepultura. They all went to Soulfly.
Right. And
in a way, I always felt like that was with all the guys, you know, being like, let me help. Like Max losing the name, I think, was very annoying, because again, we thought Sepultura was Max. And it just like it was the Cavalera brothers sort of thing that I think we thought it was. I guess it really wasn't, though. As I was reading the things, I was like, oh, I guess Andreas is like a main guy.
Yeah.
But I think a Sepultura without either Cavalera is not. I'm not even interested in that. And I think in my mind, weirdly, Against Soulfly turned into an A band, and Sepultura turned into like a C level band.
Right.
To me and my friends, we listen to this album constantly. And like, when I was in school and I would draw on the back of my fucking, you know, thing, band logos, I would always have Sepultura on there. And it would be like in the same place as Korn, Limp Bizkit, Deftones, Incubus, and Pantera, which that was like the top. That was the top echelon for me. And at that point, when this came out, Soulfly came up and Sepultura went down to
right
a way lower level, almost like local rock band level. It just was like, I don't think I need this. I think like it seems like everybody's co-signing on this Soulfly album. The whoever was doing the promotion for it was fucking incredible, because it felt like, I don't know, it's like when a movie like Dune 2 just came out after a few years, when Dune came out and everybody's fucking talking about it. Well, that was how it felt with Soulfly when this album was coming out. Everybody was fucking talking about it. You get a little bit of news. You know, if you went on the internet, you'd get a tiny little bit of news there. If you bought a Circus magazine or Metal Hammer or Kerrang or any of that stuff, just the tiniest little bit of information about the album. But like, you know, you're hearing, oh, this has DJ Lethal and Fred Durst on it. Oh, it has Burton C. Bell and Dino Cazares on it. Oh, it has Chino on it too. What the fuck? It just was like, it felt like a compilation album in a weird way of all of the guys that I like. No, Jonathan Davis is the weirdest part of it. I think I would have figured they would have got Jonathan Davis for this, but maybe he felt some sort of,
or he was just like on roots. He's like, I already did a song with you, like whatever. But yeah, like other than that, you're right. It's kind of a lot of the top guys at the time. And I think it is interesting. So yeah, the sales bear that out as well. So this album went gold, which is 500,000 copies. From what I can see online, Against sold about 100,000. So you can see how, you know, Sepultura kind of fell off. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Roots was also a gold, maybe even a platinum album.
I think the thing to look at for me.
Yeah, Roots has sold 2 million copies. So you go from 2 million copies, Max leaves, then you sell 100,000 copies.
Yeah. And I would even look at what I would look at is like the Primitive versus Against, which Primitive comes out at a time when things are starting to cool off a little bit. And I think it sells significantly less than the first Soulfly.
Yeah. Primitive, as of 2002 had sold 230,000 copies. Yeah. So it's probably about 300,000 by this point, something like that.
Yeah.
And but it did have a good peak. Like it peaked at 32 on the Billboard 200, peaked at 45 in the UK.
So even like as things are cooling off, Soulfly is still doing decent and Sepultura is just a cover band.
And Jump to Fuck Up is Soulfly's most popular song ever. So,
oh, it goes. Have you heard that one?
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure.
Oh, fuck me. The thing that this band does perfectly is give you those moments where you definitely want to move.
When for sure.
You're listening to like fucking listening to Eye for an Eye, and it just goes into this thing where it like it sounds like it's revving it up. It's like and then it sounds like a whip, and then all of a sudden it's heavy as shit. And like they just have all these moments. They're really a great moments band, I think. Like more so than song bands. They're a great moments band. Like there are parts on the album where like, holy shit, man, that like, I always bring up, Quilombo because it has the kick up the bass drum, kick up the bass drum. Like that makes you want to go fucking insane when you hear that. And then the song just goes into, I think it's somebody doing Benji Webb doing like a scatting sort of thing a little bit, and it's just so crazy how good that is. Or there's like Bleed when the rap comes in, that's really,
or even just the chorus, blood,
or Boomba where you're just like kind of, and then all of a sudden it's like Boomba, Boomba, like having a bunch of white guys just out in that audience yelling Boomba and Oomba Rama Uma and stuff. Cause that was the thing. My friends were always very, and this is such a weird thing to say, cause you know, I've talked about my friends a lot on here because you know, that we had this in common. A lot of us had this stuff in common, but they found it so impressive that I knew the Portuguese songs lyrics.
Right.
And it's like, I don't know what he's saying.
Yeah. But you also hear it enough. It's like, we all know the lyrics to Du Hast. I don't know what he's saying, but I mean, come on.
Well, and it's also like you hear about, you know, a band playing Brazil or Japan, American band, and the audience is singing. It's like possible. My friends just were like, I give up. I don't know what he's saying. I give up. But I think this was a very popular album.
For sure.
One of the, you know, I think like when we're talking about most played albums, we're talking about, you know, the first three Korn albums, the first three Deftones albums, Science, and probably Roots, and then
Limp Bizkit.
The first two Limp Bizkit albums in my kind of circle, but yeah, like, and this like goes right in there because it fits. It's a continuation of Roots in a way that I really don't think Sepultura was able to do after.
For sure not.
I guess I should listen to against because I am so negative on it. But I was very negative on it back then. I kind of felt like, why'd you guys kick? Because I think the thing that we believed maybe was that they kicked Max out of the band.
For sure. That seems to be a bit of a sentiment. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're all thinking, oh, fuck those guys. You know, they kicked Max out of the band because of his wife or something. Now that I'm older, I'm kind of like, I mean, they don't seem to have a big problem with, they don't seem to think that she was ripping them off.
No, they state that. Yeah, it's just more that she was like making decisions, I guess.
Bad decisions, yeah. Which they believe. But it's kind of like, I don't know if you can say she's making, and Max says this at one point, I don't know if you can say that she's making bad decisions if you're like headlining Rock and Rio or selling 2 million albums.
Yeah. Well, let's get into the breakup a little bit, because I think before we get into the album, like, it is a big story and we've got a few news articles about it. So the ones we have from Max are mostly about, they're mostly like him looking back on it. But this one is from 2022, actually. Max Cavalera, this is in Metal Injection, says it was his fault he left Sepultura, not his wife's fault. And then he says, I don't regret it. It's like anything. It ran its course. One of those things, though, I'll say this. It's extremely frustrating to me that some of the fans don't understand, and it's really easy to blame people for it. And a lot of people end up blaming my wife, Gloria. They always go, she broke up the band. And the truth is, we grew apart. We started hating each other, man. It happened to the Beatles and it happened to many other bands. Pantera, it's just how it is. We just didn't find the joy in playing with each other anymore, and it was time to move on. So it's a cheap shot to blame her. Let's just blame her. She's got to be the reason why that happened. It's like, no, not at all. We are the reason. I'd rather they blame me than her or somebody else. Blame me for Sepultura splitting up. I would much prefer that. And then Blabbermouth, this one is in 2021. Max Cavalera looks back on the breakup of Sepultura's classic lineup. It was, quote, rotten from the inside. Max said that they're asking him about the death of his stepson, who had died right before the recording of Roots. The situation in the band, it had been going bad even before that. It wasn't the beginning of that, but it added to it. And one of the main reasons why it added to it, a lot of people don't know the story, but we were in England ready to do the Monsters of Rock festival with Ozzy Osbourne, and we received the news that Dana died. And my wife was in total despair, and I'm her husband. I have to comfort her. So I flew back to America to be with her, and I found out later that Andreas's wife tried to move the body, tried to steal Dana's body, and tried to get him buried real quick so we could go back on tour. And that's, come on, man. I was like, who does that? It seriously made me think about the people I'm making music with. Are those my real friends? It was confusing, man. And then it got worse because eventually they ganged up, including my brother. I cannot put him out of that thing. He was part of it. It was like a mutiny. The three guys against me and Gloria. So they wouldn't talk to her. That last European tour, it was pure misery. It was miserable. Of course, it didn't show in the music. The music was great and the shows were great. But the other 23 hours of the day was fucking misery trying to deal with that. And then the band responds. Igor and Andreas gave an interview in Kerrang in 1997 where they're talking about it. And they kind of like admit to what Max was saying. This is like back in 1997 where they were talking about like wanting to go back on tour. And he was basically saying like, well, you know, we're a touring band. We should have just like got back on tour and it might have helped Max out, which is really weird. And so that was strange. And then they also give some shit to Gloria here. They say, you know, as soon as we, because they are saying that they didn't steal money. Did you question Gloria's business procedures? Not at all. The money was divided very fairly between the four of us. But they were saying that Gloria sided with Max in band arguments. Was there disagreements over the music? No. And then it says, Max believes you were disappointed with him for not playing Donington following the death of Gloria's son, Dana. Not at all. We respected their position because it was a very shocking accident. Obviously, Max could help Gloria a lot by being with her. If Max had called me up and really talked, you would have never believed we were disappointed with him. The worst thing you can do is start believing things said on the street. Kerrang asks, but after the tragedy, did the rest of you want to continue touring quicker than Max? Andreas, well, we felt being on tour and working was the best method of healing. Instead of being home and thinking 24 hours a day, but they decided to stay home. So we canceled that tour and went out with Ozzy Osbourne 3 weeks later, which is kind of a fucking crazy thing to say.
I know.
Like, we think the best way for you to grieve is to be on tour with us.
Yeah. They come off so bad.
And then this is the last one here. This crazy quote from Andreas. Kerrang says, Max feels you are asking him to divorce Gloria in order for Sepultura to continue. Andreas, no, we asked him to find a balance. Whatever the balance is for him, it's not up to us. If he found another wife, then whatever. We want Max playing music and continuing with the band. Unfortunately, he has decided to stay with his wife. I think the ultimatum was given by Gloria, not by us.
When I was texting with John yesterday before we recorded, I was like, man, this happened at such a fucking perfect time for the internet. And because this was before anybody knew how to handle that shit. And they thought the internet wasn't real. You know what I mean?
So, and I think they probably weren't a big enough band where they would have had a publicist or a PR person kind of screaming in their ear being like, you got to be diplomatic about this. They're just like, Max probably should have divorced his wife and he also should have been on tour with us. So
I do think over here, that's true. But in Brazil, they were massive. You know, yes, what I mean? Sure. He actually talks about not being able to go shopping. They had to do press conferences and shit when the band broke up. Like it was a big fucking news deal there. But I don't think that publicists necessarily knew how to deal with the internet either. Again, it's that thing. If you're a metal band, first of all, if I was in a new metal band in 1996, I don't think I would have a publicist. Because I would look down on that as a thing to have, you know? Oh, what are you, a big fucking movie star? You know what I mean? So I think that they probably didn't have a publicist, would be my guess. And that even if they did, nobody knew how word traveled on the internet at that time. And these guys all you have to do is say, it feels like none of these guys ever said no comment one time. And then they say things that make them seem so, but especially the Sepultura side.
Yeah. Just them saying this is how we think you should be grieving. The death of your stepson is crazy.
Yeah.
Well, if my wife died, I would want to be on tour. So I don't understand why he wouldn't want to be.
Yeah. It's just, and then they went on tour 3 weeks later anyway. So three weeks after this thing, they're already back out. It's like, fucking shit, man. And again, I think it is a kind of, your wife is the manager of the whole thing is a weird, I would also maybe see that as weird if I was the other guys in the band. Although, like you said, when they talk about it, they say she never ripped them off money wise. She didn't affect the music. She would just take Max's side and band arguments. What the fuck were the arguments about then?
Yeah.
It's not about money and it's not about music. Okay. Then what is the big fucking problem? I guess the big fucking problem is they wanted to hire a big time booking agent and get somebody that, you know, like Max said, he's like, we had these people that fucking worked for it. We had these people who've been working for us from day one. And these guys want to fire them all and bring in music industry guys. And I get it. I get why he would be mad about it. I think I'm probably, a part of me was very immature back then. And there, I can see the side of the band at times. But as an adult now, reading it where I don't give a shit whose side to be on, you know what I mean? I'm just doing this to goof around. I still think he comes off way better. And you got three on one and Igor, brother, come on, man. You can't be like that. You know, if Igor had jumped with Max to Soulfly, I think that Sepultura would have never been able to perform again.
For sure. Yeah,
they're done.
Yeah.
But Igor, a fucking coward. I'm sorry. Well, the dude's a fucking coward, man.
Well, and they also, like, him and Max end up playing together like a few years later. You know, they have the Cavalera conspiracy or whatever it's called. This is the last kind of quote here too, that kind of backs up what you were saying. It just says, you know, Max had said that the rest of you were upset about the level of attention he was receiving from the media. Andreas, we don't care about that. It's a consequence of him being the front man, but we didn't like being seen as musicians who are just there because of Max. In the last few interviews, Max was speaking from too personal a point of view. You should speak as a band. And it's like, okay, so the consequence of him being a front man is that he always gets interviewed, but then also you want him to talk about, you're like, oh, we don't want to be interviewed. We don't want to be famous, but also he should talk about us when he interviews. Very weird. Igor then says, I felt that the four of us would have more to say than one person. Gloria said she was fighting with reporters to split interviews between us, but we didn't see any evidence of that.
Because nobody wants to talk to them. Jesus Christ.
That's every band in history, guys. Like, grow up. Did Gloria side with Max in band arguments? Andreas, pretty much. They mixed the personal and professional lives too much. Sepultura was an escape from any personal problem they had in their house. But Sepultura is music and our profession. My wife comes to see gigs whenever she can, but she understands. She gives her own point of view on anything she sees from outside, but the final position is mine.
You also have to... Like, there are probably 10 guitar players even that the press would want to talk to. You know what I mean? You got your Dimebag Darrell. I can't think of anybody. Like, I guess they...
Like Keith Richards, Jimmy Page.
And they would Edge. So what's his name? They would talk to the guys in Korn, but not really.
Monkey never did interviews.
Right. And it's because a lot of times they did do interviews in guitar and bass magazines.
Yeah. And that's very normal to do. That's like a normal thing. It's like, oh, you're the drummer of the band. Modern drummer might give you a call.
I can't believe, like, I started thinking, like, what, how do you answer? Like, how do you answer as a band if you're the only person there, right?
And if the person's asking you your personal, like, oh, this song that you wrote, like, what were those lyrics about? Like, what is he supposed to say? Like, it just...
Yeah. The whole thing feels very weird, man. He's, like, we did take... I think everybody took Max's side back then, for sure. I mean, you're looking at who's on the album, and you're like, okay, so they really rallied around this guy. This guy knew I'll say this about Max too. The motherfucker knew exactly what to do.
I want to say, we don't talk about the cover art all the time, but I think the cover art of this is genius. You know, Max knows how this is going in Brazil. They're getting talked about in the Brazilian press. And then he does a cover where he's basically Christ the Redeemer. He's like doing the Christ the Redeemer pose on a hill, presumably in Brazil, kind of saying, like, you know, grant me salvation from these sins or whatever. Like, it's such a perfect, and the band's called Soulfly. Like, it's such a perfect mix of, you know, what was going on at the time, how he wanted to be perceived. Like, he just totally nails it, in my opinion, it's such a perfect cover for what had transpired, I think.
I mean, and think about the album, dude. Like, this is an insanely positive album for a heavy metal album, too. So I think when you listen to this album and you're like, oh, this guy seems like he's on some spiritual shit. He's feeling like, you know, maybe he's still mad at the other band. But the motherfucker is just like, I'm not going to talk. I'm going to let the music do the talking. And he doesn't really talk shit about them. And I wonder if he had kind of also sort of stopped talking shit about them. I don't know. He comes off as the nicer of the people. You know what I mean? Even just with the songs and the way he talks about the band name and stuff like that. He just comes off as like the more benevolent of the band. So, I mean, I really think that, you know, they were like, well, we get the name. We have the fucking name. And it's going to be an uphill climb for Max. And it was just the opposite. Them having the name was a liability for them. Whereas with Max, it was like he changed the name. He's gone. He's out of this thing. And it was just, I don't know. He handled it so much better. And also, I mean, this album's good. Mostly 45 to 50 minutes of this album is great. Like, you can't give it a perfect, it sucks. You can't give it a perfect score and just say, well, I turned it off after song 11 or something.
Yeah.
Well, like, that's the only unfortunate part about it.
Well, you know, it's yeah. Let's talk about the music, you know, 'cause we haven't fully touched on that yet, but, you know, I thought it was interesting. You said on Twitter, you know, yesterday when you were listening to the album that you thought that I would hate it. What about this music made you think that this was something I would hate?
It just was loud and it was a little more messy than I would think. Because this is a messy album. It sounds, but I love it. I love somehow that guitar tone works for this and nothing else ever. If anybody else did that, I'd be like, I don't want to hear this. This sucks. But for some reason on this album, it works. It's just, I always think of you as somebody who is not a huge fan of like the heavier side of nu metal. Although that's kind of changing with this show. You have definitely got into heavier stuff since.
Well, it's funny because I do listen to, like, you know, there's some metalcore bands I like, and I like heavier songs from the new metal bands we listen to. So I do think it is funny that I've kind of garnered this reputation. I mean, definitely I like a little more, you know, I like a little more melodic kind of stuff in me. But yeah, it's I didn't dislike this album at all. I thought it was pretty good. I mean, I agree with you, a little long, I think, especially with how the album is structured. It's kind of a little all over the place. So you like the songs really have a different vibe. Like it's kind of, you know, like Uma Baba Ruma or Uma Baruma or however you say it is a cover of like a Brazilian folk musician song. So it's like not even, you know, so that would have like, so that's kind of an interesting, like he kind of turns it into like almost a chant kind of song,
yeah,
you know, and then like, but then you've got Bleed, which does almost kind of sound like a Limp Bizkit song in parts. And then, yeah, you got Benji Webb on a couple of these tracks. Like it's very all over the place, but I really liked it. And I actually thought weirdly, I don't often, I mean, you and I have kind of gained a reputation on this show of, you know, really making fun of the artists and everything they ever say or do. But this actually is one of the few times where the artist is talking about their own music and it really connected with me. This is from the Lollipop magazine interview, which I know we're going to get into in a bit, but Max says, the interviewer says, and it's long too. You like long albums. Max says, yeah, I had so much inside of me I needed to release after Sepultura. It needed to be that long. And when I listen to the album, I don't think it's too long. I go into a trance until the end. I hope people are able to enjoy it like that. And that is actually how I was enjoying it. Like I talk a lot on the show about how I often listen to these albums while I'm playing video games. So I was playing a video game and the album genuinely just kind of like passed me by, but in a positive way. Like it was the songs, none of them really like necessarily stuck out because some of them are so long too, that it's hard to tell like where songs start and end. Because some of the songs are like 5.5 minutes or whatever. And then it's like, is this two songs? Was this one song? But I really, like when it was on, it was just like, okay, I'm enjoying all of this. The songs are good. It's easy to listen to for me. But it definitely was a sort of trance thing where like 30 minutes would pass by and I'd be like, oh, I guess I've listened to like 5 songs in the last, or 6 songs or 7 songs in the last little bit. And I couldn't tell you where songs started or ended, but I really liked, yeah, I just really liked having it on. I think it's a very, yeah, really solid album.
Yeah, they did a really good job. I think they actually did a lot better on this with the sort of Brazilian influence than they did on Roots, even. I think at time Roots is just a heavy metal album. I think all these songs have some sort of tribal element to them. And I think that makes them cool. The drumming on this album is something that I don't know if it's good technically, but it's really enjoyable to listen to.
Oh, it's good. Yeah. The drumming on here is very good. Yeah. Yeah. Roy Mayorga. I mean, he's been a drummer for a bunch of bands too. He was the drummer for Hell Yeah, Stone Sour, and he's currently drumming for Ministry. Like, he's like one of those guys. He's been around forever. A very good drummer.
Great. And it's just now it's time for me to go into the funniest song on this album. I need to give hope to people that, hey, this isn't all serious. There on this album called No. And I totally fucking forgot about Whoa or No. Oh, fuck. I'm sorry. Some guy is calling me. I'll call him back. But yeah, the song No, where he goes, no judge me now, no fuck around, no trust no one, no criticize, no fake smiles, no sympathize, no enemies, no redneck shit, which I don't think you even understand how important that line was to me, because the last, I know that I have like kind of a image of being kind of a redneck, you know what I mean, just because of where I'm from and, you know, things I've done in my life and stuff like that, like I know I and my friends and all that stuff, but like at this time, like calling me a redneck would make me so fucking mad, like mad in a way that like it was just kind of the one thing that really, like, it was right. A word that you were
disavowing.
I was sensitive about it. I didn't want to be a fucking redneck. You know what I mean? My parents were very much like, all these fucking rednecks in this neighborhood. I'm sorry. This fucking guy from this fucking place is calling me. And it's a personal trainer that I literally talked to 3 months ago, and he's still like, hey, I want to see if I can get you in here. And I'm like, I don't want to. So anyway, now I want to go to the second verse, which is woke in a way, which I really like. He says, no bullshit, no slave ship. That is woke.
No but slave the, ship. Yeah.
The next line is one of the great lines in a new metal album. He goes, no motherfucking Hootie and the Blowfish. Like, that is such a picture of the time. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I remember being like, this is fucking great. He's talking.
Finally, someone said it.
Somebody's taking Hootie and the Blowfish down a notch. I mean, they were, nobody knows how huge they were.
If you're
like,
I think Cracked Review has sold just like an unbelievable number. Yeah. Like you can't even imagine how many copies it sold. Let me look here.
Yeah, no radio songs, no bow to none, no follow none, no politics.
It is one of the highest selling albums ever. It sold over 20 million copies.
Oh, I know. When did it come out, though?
Pardon?
Is Max really mad at them late? When did it come out?
Holy fuck. The album has gone 21 times platinum.
I believe it.
U.S.
Yeah.
Is the 19th best selling album of all time in the U.S. That is fucking wild.
And that's why you got to take them down a notch if you're Max.
I mean, I like that record. There's a lot of really good songs on that Hootie record.
There's no way you liked it back then.
Oh, absolutely. I liked it
back then. Oh, really? Because that's like the redneck thing with me.
It came out in 1994. I was 9. You telling me I didn't love Only Want to Be With You and Let Her Cry when it was on the radio? My dad bought the cassette
of
Cracked Review, and we played it in the car. Absolutely, yeah. I don't love the whole album, but like, you know, all the singles on there, Hold My Hand, Let Her Cry, Only Want to Be With You, Time, Drowning. I'm all in, baby.
That Max was still so sick of him 4 years later that he had to take a shot at him. But that kind of shit's important too for the it's very savvy of him. It's very important to me to take a stand against pop music for some reason at the time. So that was also, we've talked about that a million times on this show. Like, they would take shots at the Backstreet Boys or NSYNC or something like that.
Yes.
And like that, taking a shot of Hootie and the Blowfish.
That's
is
cool.
First of all, they had gotten to a point where they were kind of the Nickelback of the time. Were you like Hootie and the Blowfish? Which one of them's Hootie? And yes, I think the songs are probably pretty good. If I listen to him now, I think I'd be like, oh, okay, you know, whatever. But at the time, it's like saying no redneck shit for a guy that is definitely a redneck that's running away from it. And no Hootie and no motherfucking Hootie and the Blowfish was just such a big deal to me back then. I had completely forgot that lyric until I listened to it for this show. And then right before he said it, I was like, ooh, this is the one where he says no motherfucking Hootie and the Blowfish. And I was like really into it.
It's sick as hell. I am just looking at this like the bands that have gone 20 times platinum or more are the Eagles, Michael Jackson, AC/DC, Led Zeppelin, Fleetwood Mac, Shania Twain, Garth Brooks, The Beatles, Pink Floyd, Billy Joel, and Hootie and the Blowfish.
Was Metallica in there?
No.
Oh, I would have thought they would be. So the next.
That's it. That's the list of bands. It's unfathomable to me that Hootie and the Blowfish is in that conversation of going 21 times platinum.
I think
wild.
I think the other thing about Soulfly is I don't think that people appreciate how kind of political the album is either. Like, it's a lot. Like, Quilombo, which is like my favorite song, is about a slave that comes back and kills all the slave masters, which is very cool. It's a good fucking song.
Yeah, Benji Webb just fucking goes off on that track. It's awesome.
It's crazy. It is like, and that's what I mean by a moments band, is that there are just moments in the album that you're like, fuck, I'm going to lose my fucking mind to this. Like, it's run through a wall type music, really. But it doesn't, again, it doesn't feel really, it's weird to listen to because it doesn't feel very dark. You know what I mean? It's not a dark album at all to me. Like, it's a very positive, upbeat album that I don't think I've picked up on that when I was, you know, 19. But I picked up on it this time. I do want to say if I had picked up on it when I was 19, I probably wouldn't have liked the album. Like, oh, this positivity and spirituality and stuff like that. Fuck this shit. But yeah,
I'm in the mud, baby. I want people to be in the mud with me.
I think being as generous as possible, this is a 10 out of 10 album if it ends at prejudice, I think.
Right.
10 out of 10. It's just every song up to that is good.
You know that like the regular version of the album has only one song after Prejudice, right?
Carmageddon.
Yes. So all you're saying is you're cutting one song from this.
Well, that's when I would have quit. I mean, I guess the song Remains Insane.
Yeah, I don't like that song.
And it's a cover of a Sepultura song, which is a very strange thing to do on your album.
Yeah, it doesn't. That one I didn't love for sure. Boomba Clot is like only okay. Yeah,
not great.
I could get rid of that one. But yeah, I mean, most of the other tracks, like Eye for an Eye is great, Bleed is great, Tribe is great. First Commandment is so cool too. Like, I love the use of Chino because he just comes out of nowhere at near the end, which I love because I wasn't looking at the track listing when I was playing this. So, you know, it gets like 2 minutes into the song, then all of a sudden it gets a little bit spacey, and I'm just like, qu'est-ce que c'est? Is that Chino Moreno? Like, there's almost no vocalist I want to show up more in a spacey part of a song than Chino. It's like, it's just so great.
And that is, I mean, that's really something you have to give this album to, is it like, it has a lot of guests on it and it serves them all very well.
I agree completely. And it could be gimmicky, right? Like, it could be, this is my first album without my boys in Sepultura, and I've got a bunch of your favorite nu metal dudes on here. Like, it could be gimmicky, and it never feels gimmicky.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't think of many albums where the people are better served, like where they have them doing what they're the best at.
Yeah.
And so that's the other thing I love. And obviously, like, if you haven't listened to the album, I'm going to tell you got to listen to Quilombo, Bleed, First Commandment, I would say Tribe and Eye for an Eye are very good. Eye for an Eye is a great album opener.
For sure. Yeah, no, both of those really stuck out for me. Loved Prejudice. I loved Uma Baba Ruma as well.
Oh, I love that.
Just a fun little like cover. Like if you're going to, you know, I love the idea of Max being like, you know, this is my first album as Soulfly. I got to cover like a Brazilian kind of like standard. I love that. It's really, really fun.
He did such, that song sounds,
it's about a soccer player as well, which is very funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's very Brazilian.
Yes, totally.
Yeah. I mean, there are definitely, again, when you're, I think in his mind, he made, you know, the decision that they're not all going to be winners for everybody, but that maybe there's an album in there for everybody too, you know, which I don't think I would do, but you know, that was his decision, you know.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think it does, it sounds like Sepultura. Like I think there's no doubt that it does borrow a lot from that band. I mean, obviously he's the front man and the guitar player. So of course it is going to borrow from that, but you know, it feels fresh in a way, you know, that I think even if you were a fan of Sepultura, you wouldn't be like, oh, he's just kind of doing the same thing, yeah, but in a new band.
Yeah. That's weird. You want to go, I got to get to this article, the Lollipop.
Yes, please. Let's get to the article. So this one is from Lollipop Magazine, came out on September 1st, 1998. And it's an interview with Max Cavalera by Scott Heflon. And I'm not even going to contribute here. I mean, I'll comment on the things you pull out, but I've never seen you be so excited about an interview before. So I'm letting you cook with this one.
Scott Heflon, you're a good interviewer. He really is good.
Oh yeah, it's good for sure.
So Max has broken his leg at this point, which I think means that this happened like right after.
Yeah.
I guess no, it wouldn't have, because he had already recorded Soulfly. And he goes, jumping for Soulfly, not Sepultura. Do you still have any ties whatsoever with the band? And he goes, no. Aside from, I still play the Sepultura songs I wrote. And if they ever want to do an album that represents the time I was them, I'd like to be involved so it doesn't turn out like shit. But as far as the band personally, I want to spend my time with Soulfly. I don't want to talk shit about them because I don't care. I'm back in full force. I want to let people know Soulfly is the shit. I like that answer so much, dude. That is such an answer that you wouldn't get now.
Well, especially with the mudslinging that the other guys were doing, you know, yeah, for him to just be like, look, my new band is better. But he doesn't even say it like he doesn't even say, my new band is better than Sepultura. He just kind of says Soulfly's really good. Just like listen to Soulfly and that's good enough. I mean, he does say, he's a little bit like, you know, if they're doing stuff, I don't want it to sound like shit, but yeah, I really like what he said there too. It's a good diplomatic way of looking at it, and just kind of shows that, you know, he was taking it kind of well. I mean, I know that he left or whatever, but he's kind of taking it well.
Oh yeah. He goes, and now the music you're now playing is a combination of purging demons and inner spiritualism. He goes, I'm taking metal to a whole new level. I believe we can use words like spiritual, faith, hope, and God without sounding preachy, or like white metal or something. Now, the reason I cut that out is I've never heard of white metal. Ever. I don't know what white metal is.
I guess it means like the idea of like godly metal, right? Because black metal insinuates that like it's Satanist. It's like, you know,
it's dark. Christian metal. It's just, yeah, straight up crazy. Because I Googled it.
I guess it's like, yeah, just considered the opposite of black metal.
Never heard of that.
Ever. No, I've never heard that term either.
That is definitely a weird one. He goes, I don't have a problem saying I believe in God and I have hope. Just because I play heavy music, who says I can't be a spiritual person? Who makes those rules? In a way, I'm breaking the rules of my own game, the metal game.
I'm always breaking rules.
I think some of it sounds funny because English is the second language.
For sure.
Like some of the things. You already read the one about Oh, no. He goes, actually, if I remember correctly, Black Sabbath was a pretty spiritual band. A lot of the great bands are more spiritual than people think. The media tries to tag heavy music as an unintelligent form of music. True. But that's not true. Music is religion to me. I thank God every day that I'm able to do this. In a way, I believe he wants me to play music to help people. I read a lot of mail from people, people in jail, and I think I even help people who are locked up. I think that's good in a way. That's coming from a higher power. Unlike pop music, which is here today, gone tomorrow, which, by the way, that's
not true. Not true at all. Before I was like, oh, yeah, you just take this article. That was definitely a line I had, like, come on, people are still, and it's not only that, but it's like, we find out people are detestable and we're still like, people are still listening to Thriller. It's like, oh, we find out all this stuff about Michael Jackson, but fuck, Billie Jean's really good song. So we're going to keep listening to that until the end of time.
I'm like, dude, I still listen to Last Train to Clarksville by the Monkees sometimes.
Yeah.
You know? That song rules.
And I get it. Like, I kind of get what he's saying in that. I know that for sure in the 90s, there was a thought that like boy bands were a fad, which is true. Like, you know, boy bands as we know them. I mean, we had One Direction, I guess, and we have BTS. So maybe they weren't so much of a fad. But like, I know at the time people were just like, well, the Backstreet Boys are popular, but that won't be popular forever. But definitely the Backstreet Boys are still very popular. And it's like, yeah, it is a very funny thing to say. Metal music is forever, but pop music is fleeting.
I know. And it couldn't. Well, you know, he's right in some ways. And like, it's a more complex than that. But now he goes, yes. Who do you see being able to fill your shoes and sing your songs for Sepultura? Which, that's a really good question. That is the question that I was like, okay, like, this guy's asking real questions. He goes, nobody. Really? It might sound egotistical, but I don't really know of anybody. Most people would be a Max Cavalera ripoff. Totally right. And then Andreas tries to say that's not what they're going to do.
Well, Andreas at first says he's going to sing. And I know. Then immediately they hire Derek Green to be in the band. So I thought that was really funny as well.
I did find that funny because I was like, I don't think there was a time where he was the singer at all.
No. Maybe they had a couple tour dates that he ended up singing at. But yeah, definitely it seems like immediately they're like, we got to get a new singer.
And I want to be honest, if they're saying we're not going to do, you know, somebody that sounds like Max, it's like, well, that's a letdown. I go see Sepultura and 99% of the songs were sang by Max. You're going to bring another guy in to like do a different voice than Max. That's like, I'm not here to see that.
No,
I'm here to
see
the Max. He goes, most people would be Max Cavalera ripoffs. They might get that deep voice sound, but it doesn't come from the heart and soul. Love that. So it doesn't come across the same way. They'll probably just get someone who can imitate what I do, but they won't be able to move on to new things the way I have. He's right. And then he goes, perhaps they'll create a whole different band. And then Max goes, that's why I think they should change the name. Perhaps they should get Dio to sing for them or something. Which, that's kind of sad, because I'll tell you, there has been a reappraisal of Dio and Black Sabbath.
Like, yes.
A lot of people really like the Dio and Black Sabbath era. I like it. I think it's pretty good. So yeah.
No, I agree.
It's funny. And then that's it all. I do have a little comment on, you read the Metal Injection. Max Cavalera says it was his fault. He left Sepultura, not his wife. And I just wrote under it. It always seems so crazy to me that you can have a band that nobody from the original band is in. You know what I mean?
And that's where they are now. Yeah, Sepultura still plays. Derek Green is still the lead singer, I believe. But like, yeah, none of the original. Igor's not in it anymore. None of the original guys are there. Yeah.
How does that happen?
Yeah, it's so weird. Yeah, the current members are Paolo Jr. Andreas is back in the band. Okay. So he was out for a while, I believe, and now he's back. Okay. And then Derek Green is still in it as well. But yeah, obviously he wasn't the original vocalist.
I mean, I don't know how that happens. And truly, again, Sepultura calling themselves Sepultura without Max or Igor Cavalera is an insane thing.
It's like, crazy. Yeah.
Nobody wants that. Yeah. So I had that. But then Yeah. I think I have a couple of more things, but I'm sure you have some stuff. So let's,
Sure. Yeah. Well, this one was just a funny quote to me. This is from another, recent article from Blabbermouth, February 25th, 2019, Max Cavalera says Soulfly's original label didn't like the band's name.
Terrible band name, by the way. I'm just going to say that right
now. I think Soulfly is a pretty good name. I don't think that's really
terrible, especially for a metal band. I always hated the name.
I think it's a pretty good name.
Wow.
But I just thought it was really funny because he says, I think we mentioned it to the label Roadrunner and they didn't like it. I don't know if that was the case or I didn't mention it at all. And when I was in France and I was on TV, I just said it. Roadrunner didn't like it. They said at the time, we need a cool name like Limp Bizkit or Korn, which is such a funny quote because those are genuinely two of the worst band names of all time.
Dan, so, do you like Soulfly as a name? He can't hear us.
Dan's not doing something else.
I think it's fine.
Okay, fine.
I think it's pretty good. But yeah, he says, I was like, well, I don't have one of those. I have Soulfly. Fuck it. They didn't like it. I was like, fuck it. I don't care if they like it or not. It's my thing. It's my band. So I just went on TV in France and I announced it. The name of my new band is Soulfly. It was on a big channel called Canal Plus. They did a lot of stuff and I was playing live. I think with the Deftones, actually. I was doing Head Up and then I just blurted it out. Soulfly is the name of the new band. I think that was pre-internet. If it was today, it would be a lot more shocking. It would be all over the news. Max announces the name of his new band. At that time, the internet wasn't pumping like it is now, but it's still cool. And I loved the Limp Bizkit and Korn part. And I also love the part that he's like, everybody's telling me this is a bad name. I don't care. I'm going on a big TV show and I'm just saying that it's the name.
I also always felt like it came close to sounding like Sepultura. I always felt like he was shooting for.
I remember not knowing much about either band. I couldn't remember like how they were related. Like I knew they were kind of related, but I didn't know that it was like Max in both bands or any, like they were just, yeah, it was always kind of nebulous as to what was what when it came to those bands for sure.
Yeah. I think he was like, let's make sure that, you know, this album's in the same section of the record store.
Yeah. Under S. Yeah.
Metal Rage was one and goes Soulfly's Max Cavalera. Max Cavalera.
Yeah. This is from, I believe this one is from like 2005 or something. It's not right around the time that this album came out, but it's not more recent.
So, and I feel like, I this is the most like guy that sees his life like a biopic article I've ever heard, because he goes, the big energy over anger, it's a positive thing. He goes, the big difference is that, yes,
I love this part, I have this circled too
with my instrument that Mark has. I don't play the guitar all day long, but when I do, it's really hardcore. When I'm writing riffs, it's serious. I actually challenge my guitar, calling it names and throwing it around. A good example was when I was doing Primitive, I had to come up with a riff for Jump the Fuck Up, which is one of my favorite riffs, but also my worst nightmare, because it wouldn't come out. I kept trying and trying. At one point, I remember just throwing the guitar against the wall. The producer was like, what the fuck is going on here, you know? And I'm screaming in Portuguese, calling my guitar names, picked up the guitar and said, either the riff is going to come out or I'm going to destroy this guitar. And then the riff came out. That is the most guy that sees his life like a biopic thing ever. Like, I see that movie, like that scene in the movie where he's like mad at his guitar and like he throws it across the room.
Yes. I know, like I believe him. Like, I don't think he's lying. You know, sometimes we see these quotes and it's like, do you really throw your guitar against the wall? Like, I believe that he does do that, but I also believe that's a very stupid thing to do.
I also think these
guys, how come the riff won't come out? Just throws it across the room. It's like, come fuck off, man.
I do think that, and I don't know about the new guys in Sepultura, but I'm going to say Igor, Andreas, and Max are very dramatic people.
Well, this is from the same article, and I love this part too, in the family and ritual section, and this also does have a biopic feel to it. I've got certain rituals. I don't like dressing rooms. I barely see them. It's a distraction seeing all the people. I go there after the show, not before. 90% of the time, I go straight from the bus to the stage. From the second I stand up, it's like going to a boxing fight. It's crazy how it works, but I figured myself out throughout the years and I know this works for me. When I go to the dressing room, I have a shitty show and I know afterwards I should have stayed on the bus. It's a matter of finding yourself. And I'm just like, that is just so funny to me. The idea that he's just like on the bus by himself. And then when it's time to go to stage, he just stands up and he's like, it's a boxing fight. I'm going to do the slow walk to the stage and I'm going to beat the shit out of this crowd.
There's a few that I don't have anything else on this one other than like the distortion stuff was very funny. I'm very lucky that we were born at a time where the last 40 to 60 years rock and roll and distortion exists. I think that's the greatest thing in the world for a guitar player. What else could I ask for? It's the one thing that makes us guitar sound 10 times more evil than it already is. So he's explaining like you couldn't really do that in Mozart's days. You know what I mean? Like Mozart couldn't do any, and he would have been a metal artist. But I have Hall of the Mountain King. I have one little thing from
this one is from August 23rd, 2002.
Arguably the moment that speaks loudest on this album, though, doesn't feature any music at all. Sandwiched between two of the most aggressive songs on the album is the track 9-11-01.
As soon as I sent you this article, I was like, you are going to pick out one quote in this, and I knew you would pick this one out.
Cavalera's tribute to the victims of last September's terrorist attacks. When other artists were trying to put their feelings into words, Cavalera, who has made his home in the United States for more than a decade, instead opted for 60 seconds of complete silence. I wanted to put the sorrow of the victims and their families in a way that no one has put it before, he says. I saw many artists do shows and benefits or write songs about it. I decided to do the opposite, to not talk about it at all, but let the minute of silence be louder than 1,000 words. And okay, it's kind of corny, but it's yet another time where you're like, this guy just seems like a really nice guy.
But it also is very funny to be like, no one ever did a minute of silence for 9/11. Finally, someone stepped up and said, you know what? It reminded me, you know what the quote reminded me of? It reminded me so much of Marilyn Manson on Bowling for Columbine when Michael Moore is like, what would you have said to the two shooters? And Marilyn Manson's like, I wouldn't have said anything. I would have listened to them. It was like very much had that vibe to me of like all these other artists are writing tribute songs for 9/11. Not me. Not me. I think it's got to be silence is the most powerful tool we have to remember these people.
Yeah. And that's everything I have because we did the other stuff earlier in the show when we talked about the breakup. But I'll just say this. Max comes off as an incredibly nice guy. He's got that thing. He's got that thing where when he says stuff, you sort of believe him. You know what I mean?
Oh, 100%. I believe so much of what he's saying. And I agree. I thought he came across very well. And I think your point earlier is well made that like, obviously the new metal community believed in him as well, right? There wasn't this sense of, oh, he's out of Sepultura. Maybe it's because, you know, his band, he's a bad guy and his band hates him or whatever. Like, it definitely seems like he's a solid dude and this is a solid album. And let's defend it, Brian. This is the part of the show. It's kind of the review portion of the show where we call it the tweet defense, where if someone was to tweet at you that Soulfly's album is bad, how many tweets would you do in defense of the record? Brian, what's your score?
Remember, we've changed. I've decided to go back to a 10 scale rating after doing many albums infinity, which will make some from the previous era look bad. But I'm giving this an 8, and like only not a 10. Like there's very few 10s. Like White Pony wasn't a 10. You know what I mean? Like the last 10, the last perfect album that we listen to still is Science by Incubus. That's the last album where I was like, this is perfect. Every song's good.
Brian's perfecto.
Yeah. And this is
you had another perfecto, didn't you? Wasn't there one other
one? I don't remember. I don't think so. I don't know though. I could have. I can't imagine what it would be. It could have been like,
I'm trying to think. I feel like we had another one recently that you declared a perfecto.
Well, this isn't.
Oh yeah. It was Edema's album.
Oh really?
You, I don't know if you fully admitted it was a perfecto, but you were in that ballpark.
was a good album. So I do think like this is an 8 out of 10, and only because of his policy of making more songs than he needed to.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, this is probably a 5. I'm not on the same scale as you. I'm still on the correct tweet defense scale. So 5 for me. Yeah, I think it's a good album. I'll probably listen to it again, to be honest. I really do love some of the guest tracks in particular. Bleed still whips. First Commandment is awesome. The songs with Benji Webb are great. So yeah, I liked it more than I thought I would. And yeah, I was happy it finally won a poll, because I know how much the album meant to you. And it was great to cover on the show. So yeah, 5 for me. If you want to hear more of us covering albums on this show, you can head on over to our Patreon. It's patreon.com/thepodcast. That's cast with a K, like the band Korn. We do 3 bonus episodes every single month, 1 full-length album and 2 singles. The full-length album we covered last month was Element 80's self-titled album. Alex Goldman from Western Kabuki, Reply All, Slow Fawns joined us. It was a blast to have him on the show and cover what was ultimately quite a bad record. And yeah, we have now over, I believe, 130 episodes in the back catalog. Your donation gets you access to all of those. You can also tell us what to do for a bonus episode. So if you're pissed off that an album or a song has not been covered on the show, you can head over to the Patreon, donate, and get that taken care of. We also have video bonus episodes, merch discounts, a bunch of other fun stuff. So check that out, patreon.com/thepodcast. Okay, it is now time for the challenge. And this is where every month we do some kind of fun bit or activity based on the album that we just listened to. Last month, the challenge for Linkin Park's Meteora was to write an album booklet blurb in the style of Meteora. Brian, you won that challenge. I feel like people didn't listen to that episode, because I feel like I beat your ass in that challenge. Okay. But in any case, you now have 26 wins. I have 25, and we have 2 ties. The challenge for this album, Brian, you came up with, so I'll let you explain it.
Okay, so I think Soulfly sounds a lot like Sepultura. I think that was the goal for the album. So I thought, what would happen if one of our wives made us quit the show when we had to start a new show? What would you call it? So I'm going to go first here. Yep. For John. And I would call it, now this is going to take us, the new cast. New cast, and it would be like Nuke, you know what I mean? Because okay, this is the bomb. This is, yeah, like a nuclear level cast, and it would be NUKAST, and I'd constantly have to explain that it's not the Nuckast.
what is the Nuckast? Is this about DeAndre Hopkins, the the NFL wide receiver whose nickname is Nuck? Okay, mine, I thought, you know, I do want people to feel like it's a continuation of this show. We have a band in the album title right now, the POD cast. And so I thought, you know, in honor of that, I would call it the Limp Biz cast.
That's also perfect.
It still has cast starting with a K, like the band Korn. And yeah, and I would have to constantly tell people that it's not a business podcast. It's not about the business of new metal or anything like that. But yeah, yeah. The Limp Biz cast.
Like, just explaining nuclear, like the nuclear, right?
You know, the nukes. You understand. you guys saw Oppenheimer, right? You guys know what I'm talking about. Yeah. So yeah, if you want to vote as to who won that challenge, you can head on over to twitter.com/thepod_cast. Again, cast with a K, like the band Korn. Also on Twitter, you can vote in the poll. If you're new to the show, you, the listener, get to decide what album we cover next month, which is very exciting. The poll's also on our Patreon, by the way. So if you can subscribe for free too, and you'll get notified every time the poll goes live on Patreon, patreon.com/thepodcast. But what happens here is Brian and I each nominate 2 albums in the poll, and then you, the listeners, decide which album we will listen to next month in April. Brian, what 2 albums are you putting up in the poll this month?
So it's punishment season.
Yes, we talked about punishing ourselves here.
You guys were super fucking nice about picking Soulfly. So I said, you know what? We deserve just a little bit of fucking punishment. So I will be putting up this month Dope, Felons and Revolutionaries.
Oh, yeah.
And Stone Sour, Come Whatever.
Oof. Okay.
That was, those are
Is that their debut album, Stone Sour?
Yes.
Okay. I like Bother.
I don't like any bother.
Okay, I am going in a similar direction as you, Brian. But this is kind of what you were talking about earlier. I can't remember if that was on or off air, but I think it was on air about second and third albums being bad. In this case, it's like third album and like 12th album. But I was looking and I was saying this to Dan before you got on the call or when you were listening to the single, I was like, we haven't covered Korn in a long time. It's been a while since we've covered Korn on the show. We still have Issues. We still have Untouchables. But I'm saying no. I am putting a Korn album on here for the first time ever. It is the Korn and Skrillex album, The Path of Totality. So I have not listened to a single second of that record. No question, it's gonna suck shit. So I would be excited to cover that. And then I'm putting up one that has been on the poll before. It's not a sophomore slump because I believe it was their third album, but I'm putting up Stain's 14 Shades of Grey. So truly four terrible albums on the poll this month. If you want to vote on them, twitter.com/thepod_cast. It will be a choice between Dope, Korn, Stained, and Stone Sour. What a mix.
I have to say that I do believe that Korn's probably going to win, but I do think Stone Sour is a dark horse candidate.
I agree. I mean, I think especially since we moved the polls to Patreon, I would say the polls are maybe a little bit more educated, for lack of a better word. It definitely seems like we've gotten a few albums into main episodes that were not winning polls on Twitter. So be interesting to see what happens. But yes, you can vote on those on our Patreon, patreon.com/thepodcast, or on our Twitter, twitter.com/thepod_cast. Thank you so much for listening. We love you and appreciate you. We'll see you back here next month. Goodbye.
Bye.